Slowly, Q stood up and went over to one of his three trash bags and began to search it. After about 5 minutes, he pulled out a baggie. He gave it to Decker. Inside was a half-inch silver heart on a broken silver chain. "You got this out of the same dumpster you found the sandals?" Q sidestepped the question. "I thought this was pretty." He looked at Decker. "Is it hers?" "I don't know. I kept it all this time, in a baggie, just like you see it."
"And you never tried to sell it?"
"No. I thought it might be hers and she'd want it back."
"You never thought about showing it to the police?"
"I did, but then I didn't, 'cause I was mad. They didn't pay me for the shoes."
"I need it, Q. It might be important."
The man was quiet, Decker said. "Did you find the necklace with the sandals?"
"It was right on top of everything. It winked at me in the moonlight. Am I in trouble?"
"No, you're not in trouble." Decker handed him a $10 bill. "That's for the necklace and for the sandals."
"Very nice of you, Mr. Cop."
"I might talk to you again. Stick around."
"I'm not going anywhere."
"Where do you go when it gets cold?"
"Around."
"You know, there is a shelter in town. It's warm there. There's also food and a bed and a shower."
"But they tell me what to do, and I don't like that."
"I understand. But you can't live out here in the winter."
"I got my ways, Mr. Cop. Don't waste your time worrying about me."
Staring at the necklace in the baggie on his desktop, Radar said, "It's Aaron's." "I showed it to the mother," Decker said. "She told me that Aaron wore something very similar to it. But silver hearts on silver chains are common. When I was looking to identify it, I found at least a dozen companies that manufacture this type of jewelry. I couldn't distinguish between them just by looking at pictures."
"And Q had this stashed away?"
"That's what he told me."
"You think he killed her?"
"I can't rule it out, but no."
"Why?"
"He doesn't look like he has a lot of physical strength, for starters. But more to the point, why would he give me the necklace if he did it?"
"Throw you off the scent."
"He's not that calculating." Decker sat opposite the captain on the other side of his desk. "The fact that it's broken is interesting."
"Someone pulled it off her neck?"
"Possibly."
"So why didn't he keep it as a trophy?"
"If she got away, why would the killer want to relive his failure? Maybe the killer took the sandals and necklace initially, and then he threw them away because the items didn't give him any sexual charge."
"That's a leap."
"Of course it is, but it's still a plausible explanation. The upshot is, I'm thinking that Erin Young may still be alive. Her mother suggested that if she'd run anywhere, it would be to Los Angeles. I'm sure she's using a false name, but it's possible that she's still using her own birth date and her own social security number, for instance, if she applied for a job. If I can get hold of a tax return that uses the birth date and the SSN, then I'm home free. I can get her new name, her address, phone number, where she works, the whole bit.
If she pays taxes.
If she's not a streetwalker or working as a domestic and taking cash under the table, you're right. But if she has a normal job, someone is filing a W-2 form, which means she's paying taxes. We should be able to get some kind of court order that will allow us to see if there's anyone paying taxes with her social security number."
"Maybe," Radar said. "But I've never done it before."
"It would help."
"I'll look into it if you really think she's still alive."
"It could be wishful thinking, but why not try? I'll do all the paperwork if you'll file."
"Okay. It'd be good to know whether she's alive or dead, even if it isn't related to Bogat. How are you doing with Bogat? Making any progress with what you have?"
"It's still early, but we're thinking that the killer is connected to Greenbury and the colleges, since all three victims were students. As of now,
I've had McAdams look at professors who have been teaching there for at least 7 years when Yvette Jones initially disappeared. We're also searching for someone local who might be connected to the students. I don't have any good candidates in the town department right now. In the gown department, I'm looking into charismatic professors who could have lured the victims by dint of their charm. I've got a list of a half dozen well-liked professors who have likely crossed paths with all three students. So let's run with that until we've exhausted the possibilities. I'll need that list of names. No problem, and I'll give you my reports as soon as I interview them. I'll make a copy of the entire file for you if you want it. Don't bother. Why waste trees? When you have something to tell me, just make sure you tell me. I'll see what I can do about getting a tax file with Aaron's social security number. That's gonna take time. I know. I'll talk to a lawyer and find out what rights we have. Radar gave Decker back the necklace. What do you want to do with this? If it's Aaron's, it might have DNA on it. Q lives outside. The bag's been exposed to the elements. Even if there was DNA, I'm sure it's degraded by now. Not going to waste money on that until you have more information. Okay, I'll book it into the evidence room. I've got an interview in 15 minutes, so that's it for now. No prob, Deck. Keep at it. Lucky for us, there's no time limit on murder. Chapter 27. Two morning callbacks resulted in two appointments. Decker was pleased. It was about as good as it gets with academics. At 10 to 2 in the afternoon, Decker headed for Duxbury. It was the oldest of the five colleges, founded as a liberal arts school in the early 19th century. It had been ranked consistently among the top schools in its class and had always been noted for its excellence in the classics, history, and the social sciences. The students there were among the brightest in the consortium and often more than a little full of themselves. There were a lot of protests about issues the previous year on campus, and mostly from the Duxbury students. Everything from serving inauthentic cultural food in the cafeteria, banh mi sandwiches on soft rolls instead of sourdough, to solidarity with whatever aggrieved group was in the spotlight. Most of the professors now kept a low profile, heads down and teaching their subjects in as neutral and as boring a way as possible. Jason Kramer's space was on the top floor of the Psychology and Sociology building, a wood-paneled office with a nice view. Joining his impressive credentials, undergrad Yale, Ph.D. in clinical psychology from the University of Washington, were certificates and special awards that plastered the walls. From the dates, Kramer was in his 40s. He wore a white dress shirt tucked into jeans with loafers on his feet and stood when Decker walked across the threshold. The man looked worn, droopy blue eyes, and a pasty complexion. He offered Decker a chair opposite his desk. "It's been a long couple of days." A weak smile. "For both of us, I suppose. You've been very busy up there at Bogat." "We have. What's going on?" "I've heard the police have unearthed Yvette Jones and Delilah Oakham." "It takes a while to get an official confirmation." "Two officials. So you must have some preliminary confirmation." "We do." A pause. "Thanks for seeing me on such short notice. You were very helpful in pointing us in the right direction with Lawrence Pettigrew. I was wondering if there is anything else you can tell me about him."
"Like what?"
"We think he came back up to the colleges to meet someone here, and soon afterward he was murdered. Any ideas?"
"None whatsoever. He didn't contact me, if that's what you're asking. I knew Lawrence, but not well."
"What can you tell me about him?"
"Just what I told you before."
"Refresh my memory."
"Lawrence was an extrovert. From what I remember, he was very smart and in your face."
"Do you know of any people he offended?"
"I'm sure he irritated some, but I don't know anyone specifically." He was a showman. He loved to play the piano and sing and get the crowd going. He reminded me of the MC in Cabaret.
Do you know who he was friendly with?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
Any faculty member, perhaps?
Detective, I'm not holding back. If I knew something, I'd tell you. Being that he was a Morse McKinley student rather than a Duxbury student, I didn't have the eyes and ears of the college.
One of the women at the LGBT Center told me he was very helpful to her when she did her high school tour of colleges. Ariana Root.
Ah, yes. She was there when you first popped in.
You have a good memory.
It was just a week and a half ago.
I'm glad Lawrence was helpful to Ariana. Did she know him well?
Not well, no. But she did see him at Morse McKinley on the day he disappeared.
Beyond that, we can't get a timeline.
Exactly when did Lawrence disappear?
5 years ago, a couple of years after he left school.
But we know that he came back to five colleges.
He was a woman when he returned to Greenbury and went by Lorraine Pettigrew. Why do you think he came back to Morse McKinley?
No idea. My dealings with Lawrence had been pleasant but superficial.
Canned smile.
Anything else?
As you mentioned, we have been busy at Bogat. Whatever you can tell me about the two other girls would be useful.
Kramer fiddled with a button on his shirt. I don't remember much about Yvette other than that she disappeared. I was younger and more self-absorbed. Delilah was more recent. We looked for her, you know. The entire consortium did several grid searches of the immediate acreage and the surrounding wilderness. We scoured the area for a full week. I was there every day. We found nothing, but obviously that's irrelevant in light of your discovery. I just wished it would have happened sooner, the discovery. All that forensic evidence that's lost.
Decker nodded.
Anyway, I'm sure you're acutely aware of that. What do you have?
Forensically?
Stupid question. You can't tell me.
No, I can't tell you specifically. It's less than ideal, but more than you think.
In your grid search, did anyone find clues?
I didn't find anything. If someone did, I'm sure the police would know and it would be in her files.
I'm not asking about anything official, just things that you remember about the case.
I know that she disappeared from a party.
Mix alcohol with anything, and it's a potentially lethal combination. It used to be that the school gave freshmen lectures about safety. Minimal material. Walk home with a buddy, don't drink alone, don't go with strangers, that sort of thing. But some of the women here said that the lectures put the onus of responsibility on them and not on the male students. They accused the school of being patriarchal. So we stopped about 2 years ago. Not that it mattered much. I'm sure the lectures went in one ear and out the other.
You seem to get along well with the kids at the LGBT Center.
Kramer smiled. They're good kids, very, very serious, but it's a group to which I can relate. Being gay and alone, I was very grateful to Yale's LGBT Center in my freshman year. It gave me a place to go to when I felt abandoned.
So you're giving back.
Giving to whoever wants the benefit of my experience.
I would think that's a natural byproduct of your profession.
Psychology?
You'd be surprised, Detective. Most academic appointments, even clinical psychology appointments, are research-oriented.
I do very little therapy. Well, I take that back. I do very little paid therapy. I do a great deal of listening at the LGBT Center.
You're a good listener.
I try to be.
So what did you hear about Delilah Oakham?
So we're back there.
Kramer shrugged.
There were a few rumors that she ran away with someone she met over the internet. When she wasn't located within a week, most of us thought the obvious.
That she had been murdered.
Yes.
Any candidates for whodunit?
Kramer shifted uncomfortably.
I think that's your department.
If you have some names, I'm also a good listener. No names. The rumors were that she liked to party, and she liked boys. At her age, what girls don't like boys? Kids get drunk. Kids use drugs. There's always a possibility of something accidental happening. At least, that was the theory. Okay. What did you think about Cameron Snow? I don't know her. It's a him. He was Delilah's part-time boyfriend. I don't know him. Was he a Duxbury student? Morse McKinley. That's probably why I don't know him. Had you ever crossed paths with Delilah? I know she had been enrolled in my intro to psych class because I was notified when she went missing, but I don't recall ever talking to her. I didn't even know what she looked like until I saw her picture in the paper. How many people are usually enrolled in that class? It's one of the largest in the consortium. I think Deerfield Hall holds 700 students, and the class has a waiting list. I only teach once a week, and the seminars are run by my TAs. You can see why I don't know every individual student, although I do try to reach out as much as I can. I have student hours twice a week, although I'm only required to hold them once a week. Yes, I meant to ask you about that. It's a Duxbury class, and Delilah was a Clarion student. How did she make it into a Duxbury class when you had a waiting list of Duxbury students? I have an appointment in both colleges. I know that. But there is an intro to psych class at Clarion. There's no favoritism, Detective. I'll tell you how it works, okay? Fill me in. Clarion is considered the sister school to Duxbury. If Delilah was a psychology major, even if she went to Clarion, she'd have priority over a non-psych major at Duxbury. But you don't remember her. 700 people? No, I don't remember her. I just remember when it happened. It was a very intense experience. The police helped the school organize the search. You should talk to your colleagues. They'd probably have way more to tell you than I do. I've talked to my colleagues and read the files. There are a lot of names. But I wasn't around here when it happened, and you were. It always helps to get a direct account. Of what? I don't know anything. But you know college students better than I do. Kramer sighed. Is there anything else? Professor, I'm just trying to get Delilah some justice. There are always some bad apples in the barrel, and the faculty usually know who they are. Are you talking about students? Students, faculty, employees? I don't know anyone. He paused. But as you said, there are always bad apples everywhere, and in my opinion, my non-professional opinion, the women are always at a disadvantage. Despite all this female empowerment, if something bad happens to them, they either blame themselves or tell themselves it really wasn't rape when it was. In a school like Morse McKinley, the boys take pride in their aggression. The saying is, no means yes, and yes means anal. I would have thought it was a male student who went too far with Delilah. But the fact that you found three bodies up there would point to something more than an accidental murder, unless it was a bad apple who continually had accidents. And since we are dealing with three students, it's likely that there's an association with the colleges. Are you saying we have a serial killer here? I'm not saying anything. I'm asking for your help. You probably know nasty pieces of work who have been around the colleges for the last 8 years. I know more than a few nasty people who have been here for 8 years, but I don't think any of them are murderers, and I would never name names, even if it meant catching a person who potentially has murdered three times. Bring me evidence. I'm not telling you names based on what I feel. Kramer looked at his watch. I have a meeting to catch. Anything else? Decker handed Kramer his card. If you change your mind about naming names, there are several sets of parents that would be very grateful.
That's a low blow.
You tell me to do my job, Professor. Low blows are an integral part of it. The rest of the afternoon limped along. Bits and pieces surfaced that might be relevant in the future, but had no meaning in the immediate. Since he had an interview with Michael Palick scheduled at 6 in the evening, Decker took off early and was home by 4. Rena had just started to prepare dinner. The sound of her voice was soothing to his nerves.
Are you going to have time to eat before your interview?
Probably not. Decker sighed. Just keep it warm for me.
Will do, Rena said. Jacob and Alana and the dogs are coming in on the Friday just before Yom Tov.
Is that a problem for you, all those dogs?
No, the dogs are fun. They never talk back, she laughed. Honestly, I'm more concerned about feeding all those people. I really think I took on too much this time.
You always say that, and you always come through like a pro. I'll help you with the lunches, darling. Just tell me what to do. God knows you've always come through for me.
He was down, Rena said. If anyone can find out what happened at Bogat, it's you.
You know how these cold cases work. For every year that has passed, it takes that much time to solve it. I'm looking at 7 years from the disappearance of Yvette Jones.
I'm sure it won't take you 7 years.
You're right. It could take me longer.
How's Dana Berenson?
Ah, the one positive note. It looks like she has a fighting chance. They're going to bring her out of her induced coma. It has to be done in stages.
That's great. What happened? Did she fall asleep at the wheel?
Decker debated how much to tell her. He always found it easier to be truthful. It wasn't an accident, Rena. It was attempted murder.
Oh! She brought her hand to her mouth. Oh my, that's horrible.
Yes, it is. He explained the circumstances.
Wow! Someone put in a lot of effort to hide the crime. She paused. Drug dealers.
Most likely.
Will she be in a state to be interviewed later?
I don't know. I sent McAdams up north to prepare for school. If she wakes up, he can go to the hospital and I'll meet him up there. I have to eliminate her from the Bogat murders.
Why would you think this is related to Bogat?
I don't know that it is, but I haven't totally ruled it out. Most likely her bad habits caught up with her. Rena managed a strange smile.
How did the interview go with Kramer?
All right. Nothing explosive. I don't think I'm going to find out much from Palick, either. It was so long ago, and profs tend to be a little arrogant.
Are you thinking of anyone in specific?
Hank Carter comes to mind, although I have nothing on him. He's slick. I'd love to interview him again.
So why don't you just show up and do it?
I need a reason, Rena. Otherwise, I'm just harassing the guy.
Why did he make your list in the first place?
Yvette Jones was last seen leaving his lecture.
That's right.
Dana Berenson's roommate was rhapsodizing about him. His classes are so popular that they're impossible to get into. He does give these free lectures in the evening about once a month. Even those are SRO. Rena thought a moment.
I've got a lame brain idea.
No, you're not going to talk to him.
Of course not. What would I ask him? Are you a serial killer?
Decker laughed, and she said,
But I could go hear one of his public lectures. Let you know what I think.
Decker didn't answer. He took out his phone and began to play with the search engine. And as it happens, he's giving one tonight at 8. What's today? Wednesday?
Yes, today is Wednesday. Come with me.
I don't know about that. Harassment and all that. he exhaled. Look, darling, I'm your biggest fan. No one is as sharp and perceptive as you. But if he is guilty of something, I have to think twice about putting you near him. It's a public place. If the lecture is as crowded as people say, why would he notice me? You're noticeable. I don't feel comfortable sending you there alone. Peter, there will be hundreds of other people. Forget about dinner. Pick me up afterward and we'll talk and grab some coffee and even maybe something to eat. What's he lecturing on, by the way? Decker looked down at the search engine. The talk is called Societal Dynamics of Wealth Inequality. What does that even mean? Let me go and I'll find out. You can meet me outside the hall when it's done. Then we'll go out afterward. A perfectly nice evening. Decker was reluctant. Okay, go. I'll pick you up after it's over. Do not walk home by yourself, even if I'm late. Wait for me. Deal. Thanks. Decker smiled. I will be curious about what you think. People who talk about Carter keep using the word charismatic. Don't fall under his spell. Rena shrugged. I'm not one for prognosticators and prophets. I'm usually not taken in by charisma. Obviously. Decker leaned over and kissed her. You married me. Chapter 28. Over the phone, McAdams asked, How did the interview with Kramer go? After Decker gave him the synopsis, the kid said, You're not liking him as a serial killer? No. When does law school start? Monday. What about the other two, Michael Palak and Lydia Urbana? I'm meeting with Palak in an hour at the coffee and counter on campus. I don't know why he chose a public place rather than his office. Maybe he doesn't feel comfortable with the police. I don't think he feels comfortable with anything. I got a weird vibe from him. Care to elaborate? Kramer's a psych prof, but he's got normal affect. With Palak, there were a lot of awkward pauses, like he was shrinking me in his head. That could be the baloney afraid of the slicer. Or he could be weird. That, too. The final autopsy report came back on Delilah Oakham. Her cranium looks intact. No gunshot wounds or stab marks on the bones. Her hyoid is broken, but it's a small bone that breaks easily. She could have been strangled, drowned, or poisoned. Wouldn't poison show up in her hair? Her hair was checked for arsenic and thallium. Nothing. If she overdosed, it wouldn't show up in what was left of her. We're still waiting on the final report on Yvette Jones. Her bones are also intact except for the hyoid. I'm sure her death will also be ruled inconclusive. But we know that Pettigrew was definitely murdered. Yes, he was bashed on the head. We've been scouring the area for additional bodies and a possible murder weapon for Pettigrew. Everything happened so long ago. It's hard to piece things together. I talked to Radar yesterday. He's trying to get a court order to see if anyone with Aaron Young's social security number has filed taxes in the last 4 years. So you still think she's alive? We haven't found her at Bogat. I'm clinging to whatever I have. That's pretty much it, Harvard. I'm starting to pore over the material that we found in or around the graves, see if anything's worth testing. What do you have? Bits of fiber and fabric in the graves, but a wealth of things around the graves. Old articles of clothing, a few errant sneakers, and tons of trash, mostly discarded food containers or wrappers. Litter bugs are alive and well. That's it for now. Go back to your study group or whatever you Ivy Leaguers do. It's 5 in the evening. This Ivy Leaguer is eating a sandwich. How's your sandwich? Not as good as the ones Rena makes. What's going on with Dana Berenson? Is she still alive? Ah, yes. I called earlier in the afternoon. She's defying the odds every hour she breathes. The swelling on the brain is going down. It looks like she's going to pull through, but even if she does, there's a good chance that she won't remember what happened to her. traumatic amnesia. She could also have some recollection later on. We can hope. The local police have a guard stationed outside her hospital room. No one is coming in to finish off the job. Not that she's ever left alone. One parent is always with her. Poor kid. Indeed. How's the second-year curriculum looking, Harvard? I'm at a real disadvantage not having taken an internship in corporate law. On the other hand, criminal law is going to be a breeze. It's interesting for me to examine cases from the defense side. Are you thinking of switching sides, Benedict? You have to know the other side to know the weaknesses. Call me after you've spoken to Michael Palick. Sure. You said you'd call me after Jason Kramer, yet here I am calling you. Why do I feel like I'm getting stood up? I'll call you after the conversation, Decker said. It might be late, though. Rena and I are going to meet for coffee, and then we have to watch Roman Gladiator. You're watching Roman Gladiator? Yes, I am. It's something that Rena and I have decided to do together. So you can teach an old man new tricks. I'm hanging up now. Seriously, it's nice that you guys have a good marriage. It's all about the compromise, Harvard. She scratches my back. I give her a shiatsu massage. At 6 feet 4 inches, maybe minus a half inch for older age, Decker was used to looking down at faces. Even so, Michael Palick was short, in shoes maybe 2 inches taller than Rena, who stood 5'5" in her stocking feet. What he lacked in height, he made up for in hair, a thick brown mop that sprouted on him like a mushroom. He had pond-colored eyes, a straight nose, high cheekbones, and a white smile. He was lanky and might be considered boyish and cute, rather than masculine and handsome. He wore a polo shirt and jeans with Vans on his feet. He was 39, but could have passed for 10 years younger. The coffee encounter was filled with tables and chairs occupied by dozens of co-eds, and the entry of two older men made most of the women look up from their laptops, tablets, or phones. Everybody was dressed casually, shorts or jeans and T-shirts with the occasional hoodie. Being as it was packed with no AC running, the room was hot. Decker had ordered an iced coffee, but it turned out to be lukewarm with tiny flecks of ice floating in a sea of black. He loosened his tie and took off his jacket, hanging it on the back of a wooden chair. Immediately, Palick checked his watch. The meeting was scheduled for 6:30. It was now 6:32. Decker said, "In a hurry?" "I have a seminar in an hour. How long do you think this will take?" His voice was newscaster mellow, but he was anything but. He kept shifting in his seat. He took a sip of what looked to be iced tea. "I don't know why I'm even here. Well, I take that back. I think it has something to do with Bogat. I know you've talked to others about it. I don't know how I can help you. I don't know any more than anyone else." He certainly said a lot without prompting. Decker said, "What do you know about Bogat?" "Nothing. I mean, I know you found bodies up there. They're the missing girls, right? I heard you also found a young man who was a former student at Morse McKinley, Lawrence Pettigrew. So you know quite a bit." "Everyone knows that. Everybody is talking about it. I mean, how many students go missing from the colleges? Just the few, right?" "What can you tell me about the disappearances?" "Nothing." "You must remember when the women disappeared." "Of course. The first one was a student at Morse McKinley. It was very upsetting for us. I mean, for everyone, but especially Morse McKinley." "Did you know her?" "Yvette Jones? No, I didn't know her. I didn't even remember her name until I looked it up before I met with you." "It was upsetting for you, but you didn't remember her name?" "A lot of students have come and gone since then, Detective. She was a psych major, Decker pointed out. As far as I can tell, she never took any of my classes at Clarion. And that makes sense because my classes are small and specialized. I did teach an intro to psych class way back when, but not since I received tenure 8 years ago, so we never crossed paths. What about Lawrence Pettigrew? He was a Morse McKinley student. I know you teach there as well. I do remember Pettigrew from Morse McKinley. He's a hard one to forget. I had no idea he was missing. I heard he just dropped out of school. He did. So why would he be up at Bogat? Was he thinking of returning to college? I don't know, Dr. Palak. But since he was buried in Bogat, he obviously did come back to Greenbury for some reason. Did you happen to see him while he was in town 5 years ago? No, like I said, I thought he dropped out. Do you know why he dropped out? Everybody knew, Detective, he was planning to undergo sex reassignment surgery. So you knew him pretty well? No, I didn't. Lawrence was a colorful character. He'd tell anyone, whether they were interested or not, that he wanted to be a woman. A pause. Did he do it? Become a woman? He had become Lorraine. He was a she in all but the final cut. So you have no idea why Pettigrew would have come back to Greenbury. Maybe he or she was thinking about returning to college. Everyone I talked to said Lorraine was happy with her job and with her life. Sorry, I can't tell you what I don't know. Was Pettigrew in any of your classes? As a matter of fact, I'll call him he because I knew him as a he. Pettigrew was in my psych class. My specialty is bias and prejudice in interviews and standardized testing. I suppose Lawrence, as a transgender woman, might have encountered bias. My class, by the way, is usually reserved for upper division students and, of course, for Clarion women. I made an exception with Lawrence. He was very bright. He seemed quite keen on pursuing the subject. I was surprised when he dropped out of school entirely. He could have come back as Lorraine and continued his studies. No one would have cared. He would have fit in at Clarion, certainly. And he never contacted you after he dropped out? By text or email, say? Palak folded his hands and brought them to his mouth in contemplation. If he did, I certainly don't remember. It was years ago. Maybe your memory is that good, but mine is not. What would it matter anyway? It wouldn't bear on why he was killed and buried up at Bogat. I don't know, Professor. Sometimes little things help. Would you mind checking your records? Sure, but it may take me a while. Anything else? What do you remember about Yvette Jones's disappearance? She was a student at Morse McKinley. The faculty was shaken up when she went missing. I don't recall anything about her. She wasn't in any of my classes. I wouldn't know her if she walked into the room right now. How do you know she wasn't in your classes? I looked her up. I looked all three of them up. I know you've been talking to others about Bogat, so I did my homework. Why waste your time? I appreciate that. I've only started interviewing some of the faculty. I'm curious, who have you talked to? Let's just say word gets around. You are Hank Carter's brother-in-law, correct? I see that I'm not the only one who does homework. Palak appeared annoyed. Hank talked to me, yes. He wasn't happy after he talked to you. He said some of your questions seemed pointed. Really? Decker made a face. That's surprising. I started with him only because Yvette Jones disappeared after attending one of his lectures. I certainly didn't ask him anything pointed.
So you say. Cops have a way of twisting things.
Deckard didn't speak. Palak was uneasy with the silence.
That's just my opinion.
Maybe we play a little loose when interviewing a suspect, but not when we're trying to get help. And that's why I'm talking to all of you. I'm asking for help from Dr. Carter, from Dr. Kramer, from you, from the community. Three people were murdered and buried in the same spot. I'd think the colleges would want this cleared up as soon as possible.
Of course, and I wish I could help, but I don't know anything.
Palak started to talk, but thought again.
Anything else?
What about Delilah Oakham? What do you remember about her?
I remember the case because it was more recent. The community looked all over for around 4 days. I don't know how we missed Bogat. It's such a popular hiking trail.
Bogat wasn't a trail back then, just woodlands.
Ah, that makes sense. Well, we searched plenty of woodlands, but you can't search everything.
He shook his head.
I didn't know Delilah personally, but I knew she was a Clarion student.
He checked his watch again.
Anything else?
You still have a half hour before your seminar.
I have some calls to make and some business to take care of.
A pause.
If you have anything else specific, I'm happy to answer, but I really can't help more than I have.
No, nothing specific. Thanks for your time.
They both stood.
Decker gave him his card.
Just in case you find something in your emails about Pettigrew, Jones, or Oakham.
Sure. Palak stuck it in his jeans pocket. He gave a nervous smile and left.
This time it was Decker who checked his watch.
Carter's free lecture was starting in about an hour. Allowing an hour for the lecture and questions, Decker had a considerable amount of time to kill before he was picking Rena up. He could nurse his tepid iced coffee and play with his phone like everyone else in the room. Or he could take a short drive to the station house where there was always an infinite amount of paperwork on his desk. He'd perhaps reread the files and call the kid like he promised. Option B, hands down, one out.
Chapter 29. The talk started at 7:30 rather than 8, the time change announced in the McKinley Crier. Rena was late by 15 minutes and had to stand at the back with the others. She still managed to catch most of the lecture. Carter was an engaging speaker and struck the right combination of layman and professional with occasional humor thrown in for good measure. The lecture ended by 9:15, so rather than wait for Peter to arrive, she decided to walk home because it was a lovely night. Eventually, she called Peter just to let him know where she was.
I just passed town. I'll be home in 10 minutes.
Rena, go back there and wait for me at Bagelmania. This wasn't what we planned.
I'll be fine.
Darling, I'm not going to lose my temper, but if you don't listen to me, I will. It's very dark outside, and I'm interviewing people about a serial killer. Don't be an idiot. Just please listen to me.
An idiot?
Rena had to laugh. I'm turning around now. You're right, it is dark. I'll see you at Bagelmania.
Thank you.
She hung up and turned around, almost bumping into a body. She hadn't realized that someone had been behind her. She certainly hadn't heard anything. Her heart started racing.
Excuse me.
Then she realized who it was, and her heart really took off. She took a deep breath.
Professor Carter! I just heard your lecture. It was fabulous.
Thank you very much. A wide smile. You work at Hillel, don't you?
I do.
It was Rena's turn to smile, although it took great effort. Rena Decker, how do you know I work at Hillel? I make it my business to know a lot of things.
Then you're much more with it than I am. She was a minute from town. She tried not to walk too quickly.
Is there something I can help you with?
I'm wondering what prompted you to hear me speak. It's not often I get older women at my talks.
Older women?
Older but beautiful.
Good save, Professor. It's not often that I get young whippersnappers following me home.
I live this way, and I've noticed you've changed directions.
They were on the border of the business district. People were out. She felt her heartbeat start to slow. I'm meeting my husband at Bagelmania. Last-minute change of plans.
When he didn't answer, she said,
I came because students talk about what a great lecturer you are. It's a week before the Jewish New Year, the time when you take stock of your failings. I know nothing about economics, socially conscious or otherwise, and decided to get better educated.
Very admirable. What did you think? Besides it being fabulous.
Well, it was also very entertaining.
She saw his eyes cloud over. A moment later, she saw Peter parking their car in front of Bagelmania. As soon as he got out, she called out.
He looked up and started walking over. My husband, she told Carter.
Ah, I didn't think you randomly called out to men on the street. She rolled her eyes. As soon as Decker arrived, he spoke calmly. Rena was sure it belied how he felt. You're out early.
The lecture started early. This is Dr. Carter, the professor who spoke tonight.
We've met, Carter said. He came to my office to talk to me about the terrible goings-on at Bogart Trail. He turned to Decker. Anything new?
The investigation continues.
I'll take that as a no.
Decker smiled, but said nothing. Rena could tell he was seething. She said, You'll excuse us, Dr. Carter. The detective has been very busy with unfortunate police business, and I guard our time together fiercely.
She took Decker's arm and nodded to the professor.
It was nice meeting you.
Are you coming to my next talk? I promise you it'll be equally as entertaining.
I'd love to hear it. Maybe I can even get this guy to go with me. Good night.
Good night to the both of you.
Carter disappeared back into the shadows of the residential area. When he was out of earshot, Rena said, Don't say it, just don't.
Don't say that I told you so, and this is precisely why I didn't want you to go out alone.
Thank you, Peter, because of course it makes total sense that he'd sneak up behind me and follow me after he just gave a lecture to over 200 people. My heart is still going a mile a minute, so could you wait a moment? Or better yet, say something like, Are you all right?
Decker exhaled. He must have scared the wits out of you. Are you okay?
I'm fine. She snuggled close to his body. Better now that I'm with you, my hero.
God, that was creepy, Decker said.
Creepy, stalkery, upsetting, scary. Take your pick of adjectives.
Do you want to go home?
No. Let's go to Bagelmania as planned. He still could be watching us, and I don't want him to think he got to me.
Good point.
I think it's pretty obvious that he knows where we live.
I know where he lives, so we're even. My only question is how badly I beat him up.
Peter, why would he do that?
I talked to his brother-in-law about an hour ago. He told me that Carter thought my questions to him were pointed. The simple answer is he doesn't like me. The more complex answer is he has something to hide and he's doing a mind fuck on me. He probably thinks I'm a yokel and enjoys seeing me sweat. He realized he was speaking too loud and lowered his voice. I've got to think about what's going on with the dude. My thoughts are muddled right now because I'm angry. I need to calm down.
Was I his veiled threat to you to stop what you're doing?
Maybe, but if so, it's clumsy. It's downright stupid. Want to know what I think?
Of course.
I think he's trying to make you mad, trying to get you to snap so you'll be removed from the case. Because I'm sure he looked you up and knows you're the most experienced homicide cop on the force.
Decker nodded.
Someone is thinking logically.
I've got a confession to make.
When Decker looked at her, she said, I'm packing. 3 bodies, no suspects, going alone to a lecture, and you're asking questions about local murders. Despite what you think at times, I'm not an idiot.
You're the smartest person I know.
Decker kissed her hand.
I'm glad you're thinking defensively, but you still shouldn't be walking home alone at night, and you shouldn't be overly sanguine even with a weapon. There are always attacks from behind.
I know. I did not hear him.
She arched her neck and kissed his cheek.
Believe me, I'm on the watch now.
We're all on the watch now. He opened the door to Bagelmania.
After you.
Thank you.
What can I get you?
Valium,
she smiled.
A latte and an onion bagel with cream cheese.
Got it.
10 minutes later, Decker brought the order over to their table. He smiled at her and took a bite.
What?
Rena asked. You have something on your mind.
My brain is buzzing with thoughts.
We'll talk when we get home. Other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
The lecture was good. He asked my opinion about it. I told him it was entertaining.
Ooh, dis.
Exactly. I can sling mud with the rest of them. He is a very charismatic speaker.
That's how you reel in unsuspecting people.
I'll have you know that I think I handled myself very well with him.
You're always quick on your feet. I don't doubt it for a moment.
Jackass, scaring me like that. I want to clobber him myself.
She kept her voice very low.
He's waiting for you to slip up. You have to mind your manners. You can't stalk him. He'll slap you with police harassment. He'll get the entire college behind him. It doesn't take much these days to rile up the kids.
You're right. I've got to think. And I can't think clearly if I'm worried about you. He looked up.
How do you feel about an escort?
How's that going to look to Herr Dr. Carter?
I don't care how it looks. I don't want you out alone, day or night.
I understand.
Decker paused.
Okay, that went well.
How about Karen? Rena said. She'll be helpful in the kitchen.
I need Karen to watch Carter, Rena. That much I know. She worked a lot of undercover before she came here. How about Kevin Butterfield?
Don't you need Kevin for the investigation?
He's been taking a back seat since he was the original detective on Delilah Oakham's case and it went nowhere. He's reading and rereading the files on all 3 bodies. He can read at our house as well as at the station house.
Sure, put Kevin on me. He's a nice guy. He likes my coffee cake.
Thank you for being reasonable.
Thanks, but I really don't know why I need him.
Rena,
if I can handle Chris Donati, Hank Carter should be a breeze.
When Rena saw Peter's eyes get wide, she said,
No, Peter, no, 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 no.
He owes us.
Are you hearing me, Peter? Involving him is opening up a whole nother can of worms. At the moment, he's worse than Carter because we know beyond a reasonable doubt that Chris is a bad man.
Yeah, but he's our bad man.
Peter!
I hear you, Rena. You're right. No Donati. I'll send Kevin over to the house at around 8 in the morning, okay?
Fine.
She stared at her husband.
Are you okay?
Not really. I need to figure out how to turn the tables on Carter. Let the bastard know who's the predator and who's the prey.
Thursday morning at 6:45, the doorbell rang. Rena was expecting Kevin Butterfield, even though he was early. Since Peter was in the shower, she looked through the peephole and then let out an involuntary groan. She opened the door.
"Oh, my God, I can't believe he called you. This is patently ridiculous."
"Nice to see you, too, Rena."
Donati sashayed across the threshold. He was carrying a large duffel and a backpack. He went down the hallway and surveyed the available space.
"This room will do."
"Take the one across the hall," Rena said. "That room is reserved for Tyler."
"Who the fuck is he?"
"He's a detective on the force who's now in school full-time, but he comes down on the weekends to help Peter out."
"Which school?"
"Harvard Law."
"So he's a twit."
"A bit of a twit, but he took a bullet for Peter, so he's on our good side, like you."
Wordlessly, Donati went into the guest room across the hall and slung his duffel on the bed. He then returned to the living room and looked around, lowering his backpack off his shoulders.
"I can't work on your couch. I'll set up at your dining room table."
"That's fine," Rena said. "Coffee?"
"Yes."
Donati sat down, opened the rucksack, and immediately spread out on the table.
"Password?"
Rena gave it to him. Within a few minutes, he was deep in concentration. Donati was now in his 40s, and Rena thought he looked every bit his age. His hair was predominantly white, although there was still plenty of it. The stubble on his face retained some natural strawberry blonde, but the white was creeping in there as well. His piercing blue eyes were bloodless as usual, but his face was still handsome, strong features, including great cheekbones. At 6'4", he was too tall and too lanky to be mistaken for a bouncer, but he could pass for a pro wrestler with his broad chest and the muscle from his arms straining the long-sleeved shirt. Muscles weren't anything compared to a gun. She was sure that Chris had plenty of those as well. She poured him coffee and started back to the kitchen. He said,
"Leave the pot."
Decker came out, towel drying his head.
"Hey, Chris, thanks for coming."
Donati looked up.
"You look old."
"So do you," Decker said. "Your hair is whiter than mine."
"That's what happens when you're a natural blonde."
Decker stared at him.
"You look evil, Chris."
"That's exactly what I was thinking," Rena said. "Perfect casting for the bad guy in a James Bond film. You know, the psychopathic albino hitman."
"I'm not albino," Chris said. "Are you done?"
"I'm just saying." Donati had gone back to staring at his laptop.
"This couldn't have come at a worse time. I'm so behind in all my shit. It would really be nice to have a kid to help me out. Instead, I got Mr. Artsy Fartsy touring around the world like some hotshot."
Rena said, "He is a hotshot."
"He's an asshole."
Decker said, "Kids don't always follow in the way of their parents. Look at mine."
"What the hell are you talking about, Decker? Your daughter's a cop."
"Yeah, you're right." When Decker started to pour himself a cup of coffee, Donati said,
"That's mine."
"I'll make you a fresh pot, Chris. You deserve that much." "And I'll come with you," Rena said. Once they were in the kitchen, she bit her lip and told herself to calm down before she started in on him.
"You completely disregarded my feelings."
"I disregarded your feelings, but I regarded your safety."
Safety won out. "With him around, I will truly not worry about you, and that means I can concentrate on my job."
"When did you even call him?"
"Around 1 in the morning, our time. I just couldn't fall asleep, I was so preoccupied. I did what I did because Carter was eating at my soul and I didn't want to do something dumb."
"This was dumb."
"No, it wasn't. This way, if need be, Chris can be the enforcer and I can be the reasonable cop and stay on the case. It was 11 in Elko when I called him.
I don't think he gave the matter more than 2 seconds' thought before he jumped on his private jet and came out here. Decker measured out coffee and poured fresh water into the tank. I know he's a loose cannon, but he'll protect you, and that's my primary concern right now. By the time they returned, Donati had taken out 3 guns and placed them on the dining room table. An SW-357 Magnum, a Glock G-22 semi-automatic pistol, and a Mossberg Persuader 12-gauge shotgun with a pistol grip. He picked up the Mossberg. He looked like a commando off to the Afghani caves.
This one's just for show, but it's got a convincing personality. Tell me what happened again.
Decker explained it to him. Donati neither interrupted nor asked questions. At the end, all he said was,
"Got it,"
Rena said. "I don't think you're going to need the arsenal." Chris looked at her.
"Did I call you or did you call me?"
"I didn't call anyone. I'm going to start cooking for the holidays." Donati said nothing. "I may have to go to the market." Silence. "Like in about 2 hours. Is that okay?"
"Give me 10 minutes lead time."
Back to his work. Rena paused. "Thanks for coming out on such short notice, Chris. I really do appreciate it. It should only be for a couple of days." No answer. "I know you're busy."
"Always."
"Thanks."
"Fine."
Decker placed the pod in front of him.
"I'm going to work. Need anything else?"
"Nope."
"Take care of her."
"Yep."
Donati had never been loquacious, but the years seemed to have turned him into a man of even fewer words. His actions, however, always spoke volumes. Chapter 30 McAdams's outrage was apparent even over the phone.
"That is utterly appalling. I'll kill the man myself. Is Rena okay?"
"I've got someone watching her for a day or two until I can figure out my next move."
"Who?"
"Someone. Obviously, you don't want to get specific."
"How can I help, Peter?"
"You can't, McAdams. You've got school to worry about, but I didn't want you to hear any of this secondhand."
"Let me do something."
Silence over the phone.
"Come on, old man. I feel so useless. Come up with something."
"Okay. This was on my to-do list. It's monotonous, I'm warning you. Do you have a pencil?"
"I do."
"I've been finding that low-tech is better for taking notes. I don't write as much, but I hear what's being said and remember it much better. Tell me what I can do." I was interested in Hank Carter not only because he was charismatic, but because Yvette Jones was last seen leaving his lecture. By that same token, Delilah Oakham was last seen leaving a party at Morse McKinley, right?
"Right."
"I'm interested in who was at that party. I know we have a list, and I know that Carter and Palak are not on it. But I also know that the list is incomplete. Let's use it as a jumping-off point."
"I'll call everyone on the list. Recheck their alibis."
"Yes, that too. But this is my thinking. Kids take pictures of everything, from keggers to the food they're eating. I'd like you to ask everyone on the list if they have photographs from that night."
"That was 3 years ago."
"Do you have photographs from 3 years ago on your phone?"
"Actually, I do. If not on my phone, they're in the cloud."
"Exactly. Some of the people may have kept the pictures just out of ghoulish interest."
"I don't have the original file. As I recall, there were photographs in it."
"You recall?"